demanded by Brother Harry Tennant, Chapter 2, continued. Perhaps there were others at Nails who would mean much to David in years to come. Nathan, for example, or Gad the Seer. David's presence was unusual, and news of his arrival reached Saul. It was not long before Saul's messengers appeared at Nails, with, one imagines, intent to apprehend the young man who had become the victim of the king's disfavour. The messengers arrived at a time when Samuel, as leader, was accompanying the prophets in prophesying. Saul's men were caught up in the fervour and joined in with the others whether they wished it or not. Two further companies of messengers were sent with the same result. Finally, Saul came by way of Ramah and found himself seized by the Spirit. He remained all night with his outer garments cast aside, and his experiences became a byword in Israel. Is Saul also amongst the prophets? David could not remain with Samuel, but sought Jonathan's company and the solace of his counsel. Jonathan was distressed. He sensed that evil was determined against David, but could hardly believe it. For friendship's sake, he would do anything for David, but for loyalty's sake, he could not speak evil of his father. David declared, "As the Lord liveth, and as my soul liveth, there is but a step between me and death." Death had stared David in the face when he met the lion and the bear. The match with Goliath was, humanly speaking, a journey into the valley of the shadow of death. And these were circumstances in which David could use his God-given skills of eye, of hand, and of mind. But the hatred of Saul was a different thing. Moreover, David was tied by his respect for the Lord's anointed, and whatever the outrage on his person, he would not lift a finger against the man whose office and election by God he held in high esteem. Honour the king was a precept of David's heart, as much as it is an exhortation by Peter in the New Testament. And this being so, there was no course left for Jonathan and his bosom friend but to discover the king's heart concerning David and to act accordingly. To ask Saul a straight question was now useless. Jonathan had done this once already and received an assurance under oath that his friend's life was not in danger. There was nothing left but to seek a means whereby the king would reveal his mind involuntarily. And for this purpose a plan had to be laid. The device consisted in David being absent from Saul's table at a time when he was expected to be there. And it so happened that the feast of the new moon was about due. The new moon had a significance in Israel. Like all beginnings, it took them back to their deliverance from the land of Israel, from the land of Egypt. A new moon in a clear sky was like a newborn Israel, a slender silver light which, had they been faithful, would have grown into glorious reflective fullness. She lost her opportunity, which now is reserved for the bride of Christ. Who is she that looketh forth as the morning, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, terrible as an army with banners? Song of Songs, 6, verse 10. Month by month, Israel held the feast of the new moon, offering a series of ordained sacrifices over which, except for the sin offering, the two silver trumpets were blown in remembrance and solemn worship. Later, in the time of David's systematic worship, joyous songs and instrumental music were added to the sacrifice of the beginning of the month. Sing aloud unto God our strength, make a joyful noise unto the God of Jacob, take a psalm and bring hither the timbrel, the pleasant harp with the psaltery, blow up the trumpet in the new moon, in the time appointed on our solemn feast day, for this was a statute for Israel and a law of the God of Jacob. Psalm 81, verse 14. It's interesting to note that this psalm contains comfort for those in trouble, including the kind of trouble in which David found himself as he stood in the field with Jonathan. Thou callest in trouble, and I delivered thee. From the record in Samuel, it would seem that it was a custom to hold a family feast on the occasion of one of the new moons each year. There's no provision for this in the law of Moses, although the spirit of it is to be found in the various national feasts which brought together the whole congregation as one family. Jonathan and David agreed to inform Saul, should he inquire concerning David's empty place at the royal table, that by special request David had gone to the family feast in Bethlehem at the command of his elder brother. Some have seen in this arrangement a mere subterfuge, a stratagem based on lies. Although the position was desperate, it was not such as would bring the two men to plan to lie to the king. Great men have lied when confronted unexpectedly by a challenge too powerful for their immediate strength. Peter, for example, when he denied his Lord. But to arrange to speak an untruth is another matter, and it seems most unlikely that David and Jonathan would have stooped to that. Proof that they did not seems to be found in the fact that the arrangement was committed to God in prayer. O Lord, God of Israel, be witness, RV margin, when I have sounded my father about tomorrow, any time or the third day. 1 Samuel 20 verse 12. Jonathan's conscience was clear enough to be able to invoke the presence of God in the conduct of this delicate matter. In case the situation made it impossible for them to meet again in person, they arranged a means whereby the king's mind could be made known to David. He would return to a hiding place in the same field, and Jonathan promised to send him a coded message by means of arrows. Before they parted, the two men stood and made a covenant as though one of them was going to die. Jonathan revealed his heart and his deep conviction that David was destined by God for great things in Israel. And there was no resentment, no jealousy in Jonathan's bearing, but instead a satisfaction that it should be so according to the will of God. With the feeling which the lesser bears towards the greater, the king's son sought favour of the king elect. Thou shalt not only while I yet live show me the kindness of the Lord, that I die not, but also thou shalt not cut off thy kindness from my house for ever. No, not when the Lord hath cut off the enemies of David, every one from the face of the earth. It was the custom of heathen monarchs to exterminate the whole family of any rival for the throne, and Jonathan pleaded that whatever height of fame or glory David should reach, the family of Jonathan would be secure. David made the covenant and kept it. Thus the friends parted, Jonathan for the palace and a very dangerous and difficult task, David to Bethlehem and to return on the third day. This was a round journey of around 25 miles. The plan worked almost disastrously for Jonathan. When the king learned on the second night why David's place was empty, he reviled Jonathan as the son of a perverse and rebellious woman. What secret lay behind these words, the scriptures do not reveal. It may well be that Jonathan's mother had remained faithful to her God throughout Saul's assertion of self-will and had reaped the king's wrath. One is tempted to think that the sweetness and courage of Jonathan, his godliness and humility, sprang from the teaching he'd received of his mother. True it is that Saul would have been near the mark had he said, "Thou son of a perverse and rebellious father, do I not know that thou hast chosen the son of Jesse to thine own confusion? For as long as the son of Jesse liveth upon the ground, thou shalt not be established, nor thy kingdom." Jonathan remonstrated with his father on David's behalf, but all in vain. The spear ever ready at Saul's hand shot across the table in a vain effort to smite the innocent and upright friend of a righteous man. Jonathan left the table in righteous anger. Not on his own behalf, he was too big a man to fall victim to self-pity, but for David, because his father had done him shame. Saul had opened his mind in these minutes of vilification. He knew that David was ordained to sit on the throne and hated him for it. Jonathan, whose place David would take, loved him as the Lord's chosen. And there is a lesson here for all of us. The will of God is a test of our character. We can cooperate and be blessed, or resist and be destroyed. Saul had set himself against the irresistible might of the incoming Davidic title. Tide. Jonathan humbled himself before it in marvellous resignation and willing acceptance. David returned to the place of tryst. It was the third day, and his heart waited for the message. In the distance, Jonathan appeared with the boy carrying the arrows. The stone where David hid was aptly named Ezel, which means separation or division. These arrows sped toward the mark, and the lad ran to collect them. David waited for the word. What would it be? This side or that side? He had not long to wait for the words which spelt separation. Make speed, haste, stay not. The arrow boy returned to the palace, and events had so turned out that it was safe for Jonathan to bid farewell to David face to face. David arose and drew near, bowing three times in respect for the king's son. Grief seized the two lone figures by the stone of separation. The palace would be nothing without David. And David would be friendless and an outcast without Jonathan. Weeping relieves feeling and betokens inner emotions, but it does not solve problems. The prostrate figure in Gethsemane, weeping, it would seem, his very life's blood from brow to cheek, reached the moment of ultimate resolution, of final commitment, and said, "Arise and let us be going." Out of our tears, finally, if they are to be of value to us, there must emerge a resolve of spirit. Perpetual and inconsolable grief is defeat and self-destruction. However great the burden, however irreplaceable the loss, however terrible the desolation which brings about our sorrow, for the follower of Jesus, the moment must come when, having poured all his tears into God's bottle, he lifts up the head and says, "Arise, and let us be going." And thus Jonathan lifted David from the well of his grief and said, "Go in peace, for as much as we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord be between me and thee, and between my seed and thy seed for ever.'" And he arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city.